Every now and again on these Sunday evenings, we try to deal with something that's topical, contemporary, something that's in the news. Well, I suppose the thing which is dominating the news at the moment, inevitably, is the Gulf War, and understandably so. But one of the problems with a news item of that magnitude is that it drives many other important issues off the front pages. Just around Christmas time, there was an issue which was beginning to gain some public profile in the media, which we've heard little of, really, since then, because there's been so much to say about the Gulf. And it's that I want to talk to you about tonight. It's the issue of homelessness. Being in a church like this, having the doors open to the church office during the week, one of the things you find is that there's a constant stream of people looking for help. They come and perhaps ask for money, perhaps ask for food, perhaps ask for accommodation, because they haven't got anywhere to go, and they haven't got any resources of their own. When I first came to Cambridge 11 or 12 years ago, I was familiar with this sort of problem. There was a church army hostel right opposite us here in Willow Walk, and many of the men from that hostel used to come in and talk now and again. But the whole problem of homelessness then, 12 years ago, centered around the needs of men who were, generally speaking, middle-aged or older. It was very rare in those days to find somebody homeless coming to look for help who was under 30 or even under 40. In the last few years, there has been a very marked and worrying change in that. The vast majority of people who come to the church now looking for help because they're homeless are under the age of 25. And increasing numbers of them are young girls. I suppose we have certain stereotypes in our minds when it comes to young people on the streets. We see them knocking around in Cambridge, sitting perhaps on the green over there with their dogs. I suppose some of us have the feeling that they are runaways, naughty children whose parents are desperately looking for them, who are adolescents in rebellion and have run away from home. Maybe that's what we think they are. Or maybe we think of them as drunken layabouts, as kids who've got mixed up with drugs or alcohol or solvent abuse and whose lives are falling apart as a result and can't put anything together, can't adapt to normal society. I've talked to many dozens of these kids over the last few years, and I can tell you, though perhaps I had that stereotype in my mind when I began, it's been progressively eroded by the actual facts of the case. I don't think more than 5% of the young people who are on the streets of Cambridge today would fall into either of those categories. One of the frightening things that one finds about these young people, actually, is that in a very high percentage of cases, nobody actually cares where they are. They have absolutely nobody in the world who is really showing any interest in their whereabouts or their welfare. And though it would be a mistake to give you the impression that they bear no responsibility at all for the mess they've got themselves into, they have made decisions which have been foolish or possibly even sinful. They have shown irresponsibility, perhaps. Nevertheless, you don't have to talk to many of these young people before you become very profoundly aware that in all sorts of ways they are victims rather than sinners. The reason they're on the streets is because they are homeless, an awful lot of them. The number of people recognised as homeless in 1991 in Britain is around about 480,000. These are people whom the local authorities have recognised as people who have no proper home and to whom they feel a statutory obligation to provide housing. They're probably at present living in very inadequate accommodation or crowded in with parents or in temporary accommodation, bedsits and what have you, provided by the council. But that figure is only the tip of an iceberg, because the way these statistics are collected, in fact, excludes large numbers of people who are, in fact, far more destitute and desperate than most of that 480,000. It excludes almost all single people and couples without children. It excludes all those who are living in squats or living rough. They just aren't included in those statistics. In fact, it is impossible to get reliable statistics of the number of young people, for instance, who are involved in this problem today. But some people feel that the total number may be as many as 2 million across the whole of the United Kingdom. People who are homeless in one way or another. Certainly from our observation in Cambridge, the number of people sleeping rough or in squats is probably between 100 or 200. And we are just a very, very small part of the problem. Why are they homeless? In some cases, it's because they have no home at all that they could go to. Some, for instance, find themselves on the streets who are in fact mentally ill and would in other circumstances have been institutionalized in mental hospitals. But mental hospital places are being, as a matter of policy, reduced and mental hospitals are being closed. And although, in theory, the idea is that these people should find a more satisfactory mode of care within the community, in practice what is happening is that quite a large number of these people, unable to cope socially, are finding themselves on the streets. A recent survey by Shelter in London revealed that 40% of homeless young people in London are actually kids who have left care, local authority care. That is, kids who had no adequate home of their own, who were taken into care by the local authority, and at around the age of 15 or 16, either were discharged or discharged themselves, but who found, because they were socially lacking in social skills or financial resources, found they couldn't cope in the community. So a large percentage of these people are either discharged from care and have no family home, or are actually mentally ill. Some of these folk also, perhaps the next largest group, have very poor home backgrounds. I don't mean poor necessarily financially, though that may be so. But they have poor home backgrounds emotionally, in terms of family support. Quite a number of these young people, if you talk to them and say, well, why don't you go home? You know where your mum and dad are. They will tell you that, quite frankly, home is a worse nightmare than living on the streets. It may be hard for us, who have nice, secure homes, loving homes, caring homes, to imagine how that could possibly be the case. But I assure you, it is how a great number of these young people feel about things. Some of them have been submitted to sexual abuse or violence. Many of them know they are not really wanted at home and have actually been physically thrown out of home. A common scenario here, of course, is the broken marriage. The broken marriage where the remaining partner takes in somebody else, a boyfriend or a girlfriend, with whom the adolescent child simply cannot get on. You could psychoanalyze it and say what's happening is that all the resentment and anger which that child feels and has been unable to verbalize at the emotional deprivation as a result of the broken home has been transferred onto this newcomer. They're getting the blame for it all. That's why they can't develop a good relationship with them. That may be so. It's a very understandable problem, if so. But certainly, if you talk to them, many of them will say, coming from such homes which have been broken and then repaired with some new stepfather or stepmother, that they are not wanted at home and have even been threatened at home and told to leave because they are spoiling their parents' life. And then there is a third category, definitely the smallest group. And these are young people who voluntarily left home. They may have a perfectly adequate family home, but they have decided to leave, as young people in their mid-teens sometimes will, perhaps with the thought that they would find freedom and excitement in the big city. But they just haven't, things just haven't worked out for them as they thought it might be. Sometimes they've got caught in the poverty trap. They found the cost of housing formidable and not been able to provide homes for themselves, and so have found themselves going down a spiral of poverty which they just can't get out of. And some of them, I think it has to be said, actually prefer a vagrant lifestyle. They are misfits. You could say they're antisocial. You could say they are the 1990s equivalent of the hippies. But there's a certain percentage of people who just prefer to be on their own, living rough or in community. They ask very little from life, and that's where they want to be. This is who they are, then, the homeless. Very few of them have actually chosen this lifestyle. The vast majority have found themselves trapped in it for one reason or another. Their problems are obvious. The first problem they have to find is, where do they sleep each night? If they're lucky, they may find some friend in the youth subculture on the streets who understands their problem, who maybe has been where they are, but now has a bedsit of their own, which they're willing to share with one or two or three or four or more. Some of them will find accommodation like that. Some of them will find an empty house, a squat, and occupy it, perhaps in prodigious numbers, 10 or 12 or 15 of them. In the summer, it's not unusual to find that they have improvised a camp for themselves. Over on the banks of the Cam last summer, there was quite a considerable squatter's camp for homeless young people, made up with cardboard boxes and pieces of tin and what have you. They lived there very happily most of the summer. And if all that fails, if they can't find access into any of these groups, then they sleep rough. In the winter, rough is tough. Having found where they're going to sleep, of course, the other problem they have is food. How do they keep body and soul together? Being on the streets, having no proper accommodation, of course, is a problem in itself from that point of view, because the only food you really have access to is the expensive food you buy pre-prepared in shops. You don't have cooking facilities to prepare your own food from raw materials. So where do you get money to buy food? You could say, why don't they go and get a job? Well, some of them would, I think. But of course, if you've got no permanent address, and if you've been living rough for a few weeks, you don't look particularly employable. If you're a man, you're not very well shaven, you haven't had a decent haircut, and your clothes are looking decidedly tatty. You probably smell a bit, too. And if you've got no address that you can give, why, a responsible employer is going to look very askance. It's not as easy getting a job as you might think when you're homeless. You could say, well, why don't they go down to the DSSS, the Department of Social Security? Aren't they there for these sort of problems? Well, of course they are. But that may not be as easy as you think. The government in recent years has taken a policy decision that homeless young people should be encouraged to go home to their families and not encouraged to stay on the streets, which is understandable. But the way in which the government has sought to provide incentives in that direction has turned out to be quite cruel. They have, for instance, made the regulation that 16 and 17-year-old young people cannot receive Social Security benefits. They are not eligible for them, unless they're on a youth training scheme, probably therefore based at home, have an address. So many of these young people who find themselves ejected from care or from homes that no longer want them, at precisely that age, find they have no access to any finance at all through the Social Security. Those who are a little bit older, who are under 25, have also found in recent years more restrictions. The government has reduced benefits to this age group in order to encourage them not to remain in this homeless condition. And of course, you can only obtain your Social Security fortnightly in arrears, which means that very often young people in a new place find themselves having to cope for at least a fortnight, possibly longer, with no financial resources at all. And that fortnight can be very demoralizing. Anyway, Social Security benefits are so small, and these folk have so little support that it's not unusual to find that they are just getting into debt. They're not very experienced at handling personal finances. They don't know how to budget. It may very well be that the DSSS payments they're receiving are not really adequate anyway to meet the needs of their rent and food. So they find themselves sliding into further and further debt, behind with their rent, behind with their electricity, and so on. Money can be a real problem then. If you haven't got a job and the DSSS isn't meeting the bill, what else can you do? Well, frankly, there is no desirable or legal alternative. You can beg, and many of them do. But quite apart from the destruction to self-respect which begging causes, and they feel it, don't you be so naive as to think they don't. Quite apart from the destruction of self-respect and personal dignity that begging gives rise to, it is illegal to beg on the streets in this country. In 1990, 1,426 young people were prosecuted under the Vagrancy Act of 1824. If you don't beg, then of course there's petty crime, mainly theft. Who can deny that these folk do pinch things? But then if you had an empty stomach, maybe you would. But perhaps most alarming of all, and most distressing to me of all, is the growing problem of prostitution. A recent survey by Shelter in London has discovered that 1 in 3 young people on the streets has been solicited for sexual purposes, for prostitution. Of that 1 in 3, of course, the vast majority are not girls, but boys. When the same survey was done 5 years ago, the statistic was only 1 in 5. They feel the streets of London are becoming a moral trap for these homeless youngsters. That's the size of the problem, then. And when you really get involved in it, when you bother to find out about it, it touches your heart and distresses you in a very profound way. I can speak for that. And the more involved you get, the more distressed you become. Michel Quast was a Roman Catholic priest, still is, I assume. In the 1970s, he did a lot of work in Le Havre with homeless people. And he wrote a series of meditations about his experience during that time. Let me read one to you now. Lord, I can't sleep. I have got up out of bed to pray. It is night outside, and the wind blows, and the rain falls, and the lights of the city, signs of the living, pierce the darkness. They bother me, Lord, these lights. Why are you showing them to me? They beckoned to me, and now they hold me captive, while the woes of the city murmur their muffled lament. And I cannot escape them, Lord. I know these sufferings too well. I see them rising before me. I hear them speaking to me. I feel them hitting me. They were bothering me when I was trying to sleep. I know that in one single room, 13 crowded people are breathing on one another. I know a mother who hooks the table and the chairs to the ceiling to make room for mattresses. I know that rats come out to eat the crusts and bite the babies. I know a father who gets up to stretch oilcloth above the rain-soaked bed of his 4 children. I know a mother who stays up all night since there is room for only 1 bed and the 2 children are sick. I know a drunken father who vomits on the child sleeping beside him. I know a big boy who runs away alone into the night because he can't stand home anymore. I know that some men fight for the women as there are 3 couples in the same attic. I know a wife who avoids her husband as there's no room for another baby at home. I know a child who is quietly dying, soon to join his 4 little brothers. I know. I know hundreds of others. Yet I was going to sleep, peacefully, between my clean white sheets. I wish I didn't know, Lord. I wish it were not true. I wish I could convince myself that I'm dreaming. I wish someone could prove I'm exaggerating. I wish they'd show me that all these people are to blame and it's their fault they're so miserable. I'd like to be reassured, Lord. But I can't. It's too late. I've seen too much. I've listened too much. I've counted too much. And Lord, these ruthless figures have robbed me forever of my innocent tranquility. One of the disappointments for me, speaking as an evangelical Christian, is that though evangelicals have, generally speaking, grown to exert a considerable amount of influence on social issues in the last 10 or 20 years, this is one issue they seem to have neglected. Roman Catholics, like Abbe Juast, have a very long tradition and reputation of caring for the homeless and destitute. Generally speaking, evangelical Christians have a much poorer record. I think that's sad. I think Christians should care about homelessness. And I'd like to give you 5 reasons from the Bible why I think that. The first reasons Christians should care is because homelessness on such a scale implies there is something wrong with our society. That seems to me to be a conclusion you can validly draw from the Old Testament view of this matter, for instance. The prophet Micah was ministering in Judah during the 8th century. That was a time of great affluence among the Israelites. They were doing well, thank you very much. The enterprise culture was booming. But interestingly, it was precisely in that situation of growing national affluence that the problem of homelessness appeared for the very first time, probably, on the streets of Jerusalem and within the towns of Judah. See how Micah complains about the way in which people covet houses and take them and defraud people of their homes, drive women from their homes. Take away my blessing from their children forever, he says. Get up, go away. This is not your resting place. That's what people were saying to them. We, I suppose, would like to say that it's not our fault that there are people who are homeless on the streets. Yet I'm afraid, even without intending it, our increasing affluence in the last 20 years has had the effect of making the problem of homelessness more acute. What has happened, you see, is that, as you all know, house prices and rents follow very closely average earnings. That's market forces. It just happens. So house prices rise, rents rise as our earnings rise. But for those who haven't got financial resources that are growing like everybody else's, the problem of finding adequate housing becomes more and more acute. What's more, in the enterprise culture, when there's a lot of money around, the houses people want to build are not low-cost, cheap housing for homeless people, but expensive, exclusive housing for rich people. And, of course, as the quality of our neighborhoods improves, and we all become very conscious of the value of our house, and we don't want it to deteriorate, the acceptability of poorer people living in low-cost housing near our house, or hostels for the homeless near our house, becomes increasingly resented. The NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard, takes over. Now, I'm not saying that there's a sort of sinfulness about our affluent society which can be directly related to homelessness in quite the way that Micah suggests, that people were violently being thrown out of homes and dispossessed by extortionate landlords and so on in 8th century Israel. But something is wrong with our society. If we can see these consequences of our growing affluence and not feel moved to do something about it. And this is particularly so, I think, when the young are affected. In Matthew 18, Jesus has some very hard words to say about people who make children vulnerable to sin. He talks about the preciousness of children to God, how their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven, how the Father in heaven is not willing that any one of these should be lost. He takes a little child and actually puts it in the midst of the disciples and said, unless you become like a little child, you won't get to heaven. And in the context of this very rich affirmation of the value of the young, Jesus makes this comment. But if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a large millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to sin. I have absolutely no doubt that homelessness causes people to sin. Homelessness is leading young people into moral danger in most outrageous ways. There is something wrong, fundamentally wrong, with a society which knows that is happening and doesn't do anything about it. It is not too much to say there will be a mark of judgment, I think, against such a society, if the Bible is to be believed. The second reason I think Christians should be most concerned about this question of homelessness is because God's law demands generosity to the destitute. In the Old Testament law, there were several categories of people whom the people of Israel were specifically commanded to watch out for and take care of. And among them was the alien and the fatherless. The reason the alien and the fatherless were singled out for special mention, of course, is because these people had no family support system. And because they had no family support system, they probably also had no land to which they had title. They were the vulnerable in society because they didn't have, in this highly family-based society which Israel was, the most precious social support, social welfare system they could possibly have, a caring family. You must take care of such people, the law said, the alien and the fatherless. And there were various things they were commanded to do for them. The tithes, the 10% tax, which the people were commanded to take, a large part of that was dedicated to the care of such. And there were the gleanings, as they were called. When they cropped their fields, they were to leave the edges so that people in this destitute condition could go around and pick the corn and have some material resources of their own. I don't know what the equivalent of the tithe and the gleanings might be today, but I'm certain it means more than simply the welfare state. I'm certain it means that as Christians, we should be concerned to see that vulnerable people who have no family support system of their own in society are cared for, and that we have a place and a duty in that. The third reason why Christians should be involved in caring for the homeless, it seems to me, is because Christ himself knew homelessness. Foxes have holes, he says, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. I think, for many of us, whether we admit it or not, there is a stigma attached to homelessness. A suspicion in the back of our mind that if someone is homeless, then somewhere along the line they've been irresponsible. Somewhere along the line they've been stupid. Somewhere along the line they've been sinful. Respectable, responsible people don't get homeless. So there's a stigma attached to those who do. Well, if we take on board the fact that Jesus was homeless, that surely can't be right, can it? No doubt people can become homeless because of moral weakness or irresponsibility. I'm not denying that for a moment. But if Jesus himself was a vagrant, we'd better be careful how we deal with vagrants, don't you think? In fact, not only was Jesus himself a vagrant,
In his own personal ministry, he demonstrated an immense care for the outcasts of society, the people who had no home, no security, the lepers, the prostitutes, the street beggars. These were the very people that Jesus spent most of his time with. To follow a Jesus like that, then, surely implies that we too must be concerned about the homeless. The fourth reason why, as Christians, we should be concerned for the homeless, it seems to me, is that true faith demands social action. There's a very important passage, in my view, in the book of Isaiah that relates to this whole issue of homelessness and how we respond to it. Let me read a little of it to you. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke. To set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. It's an evocative verse, isn't it? Not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Isaiah here is speaking into a situation where the people were very religious, were very keen on praying and fasting, but the temple was a hive of activity. But it wasn't being translated into care in the community. There was social injustice and a lack of social welfare. God isn't interested in your piety, says Isaiah, while that is the case. That isn't the sort of fast he's interested in, the sort of fast that makes a big song and dance about how religious you're being, but leaves people destitute on the streets or in bondage to slavery. Now, this is the kind of fasting I've chosen, to loosen the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free. And in that context, Isaiah specifically mentions sharing your food with the hungry and providing the poor wanderer with shelter. When you see the naked, to clothe him. And not to be offended by the sight of flesh and blood unclothed. See, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? The reason we turn away from those young people on Jesus Green with their dogs is because we find them embarrassing, maybe intimidating, but certainly embarrassing. They dress in an uncouth fashion. Their hair is long. They look dirty. They smell. So we would rather turn our back on them and forget that they are human beings, our own flesh and blood. And the fifth reason why Christians should be concerned is because sins of omission in this area will be judged by God. Matthew 25 is a passage I think one only has to read. One doesn't have to comment on it. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory, and all the nations will be gathered before him. And he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. And then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? And the king will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. And then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? He will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. So what can we do? Well, there are some things that you can pray about. Homelessness Sunday is the 10th of March. It's also Mothering Sunday, an interesting conjunction of ideas. There are certain projects locally here in Cambridge that you might like to pray about or consider giving to. Church Housing, the Church Army project, provides hostel accommodation for a number of homeless people in Victoria Road. The Cyrenians, similarly, they also run the Bus Project, which is a day centre, drop-in centre, in the Lion Yard area. The Winter Comfort Van provides food each night for homeless people, usually based in Sydney Sussex Street. A new project, which is just getting off the ground, is Emmaus. This hopes to begin an actual community, which will take in some of these homeless people and seek to rehabilitate them. Shelter, the national charity, has a local branch here in Cambridge and does a lot in the way of media representation. The YWCA has a project which is just getting off the ground now. They are particularly concerned for homeless girls and are seeking to provide hostel accommodation for them. But there's an awful lot of money needed. And we here at Edenwell, we have our own small pilot homelessness project now, providing food for homeless people, mainly young people, on Sunday and Monday evenings. If you'd like to get involved in that, we'd like you to contact David Ellerton. I can give you his telephone number or his address after the service. And there are things we can do too on the political arena, which we ought not to neglect. This is a national problem, far bigger in London and in Edinburgh and in other large cities than it ever is in little Cambridge. We can write to our local MPs, and there is a local meeting of folk who are concerned to raise public awareness of this problem, which is going to take place on the 15th of March at 8 p.m. at English Martyrs Hall in Union Street. It would be good if a few people from Eden were represented. Let me close by warning you, though, that if you do get involved in this sort of problem with these sort of folk, it can be very costly. Michel Quast discovered that. In our closing prayer, I'm going to read a second of those meditations he wrote during that time when he was working in Le Havre with homeless and destitute people. Let's pray together. Lord, why did you tell me to love all men? I've tried, but I come back to you frightened. I was so peaceful at home. I was so comfortably settled. It was well furnished, and I felt cozy. I was alone. I was at peace. Sheltered from the wind, the rain, the mud, I would have stayed unsullied in my ivory tower. But, Lord, you have discovered a breach in my defences. You have forced me to open my door. Like a squall of rain in the face, the cry of men has awakened me. Like a gale of wind, a friendship has shaken me. As a ray of light slips in unnoticed, your grace has stirred me, and rashly enough I left my door ajar. Now, Lord, I'm lost. For outside, people were lying in wait for me. I didn't know they were so near. As soon as I started to open the door, I saw them, with outstretched hands, burning eyes, longing hearts, like beggars on church steps. The first ones came in, Lord. There was, after all, some space in my heart. I welcomed them. I would have cared for them and fondled them, my very own little lambs, my flock. You would have been pleased, Lord. I would have served and honoured you in a proper, respectable way. It was sensible, till then. But the next ones, Lord, the other people, I hadn't seen them. They were hidden behind the first ones. There were more of them. They were wretched, and they overpowered me without warning. We had to crowd in. I had to find room for them. Now they have come from all over in successive waves, pushing one another, jostling one another. They've come from all over town. From all over the country, from all over the world, numberless and inexhaustible. They don't come alone any longer, but in groups, bound one to another. They come bending under heavy loads, loads of injustice, of resentment, of hate, of suffering, of sin. And they drag the world behind them, with everything rusted, twisted, and badly adjusted. Lord, they hurt me. They are in the way. They are everywhere. They are too hungry. I can't do anything anymore. They push the door and the door opens wider. Lord, my door is as wide open as it can get. I can't stand anymore. It's too much. It's no kind of life. What about my job, my family, my peace, my liberty? What about me? Lord, there's no more room for me at home. Don't worry, son. While people were coming into you, I, your father, I, your God, slipped in also among them.